welcome once again to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be with you in studio today. Little change in the weather. What a great day.
you like the change in the weather?
I'm not into high heat and high humidity.
Well, you're going to turn up the heat though with this guest.
Yes, we're going to turn up the heat today. Well, look, welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Our guest for today is Dan Shirobi, and Dan is a business coach, public speaker, business developer, publisher, and nonprofit organizer. And we're going to be talking about supervising greatness and sharing the vision throughout the organization. Dan coaches rapid developing organizations with management that wants to succeed at impressive levels. He's an Advi coach who coaches the owners of privately held and family-owned businesses. He's been a coach at the Executive Coaches of Orange County. He co-founded a publishing company in 1999 that today publishes magazines for military personnel and their families with a worldwide circulation of over 2 million. That's impressive, Dan. And he's an active member of the nonprofit community. Dan was active in the development and opening of a city's first family resource center, was the originator and co-founder of Toastmasters on the Air, a public access cable TV program. He has an MBA in technology management and a BS in law enforcement and correction. You have a very varied background here. Dan, welcome to the show.
All right, thanks, Doug.
So, we could talk about almost anything with your background. I mean, from law enforcement to technology, and then you're over on the soft side with nonprofits and coaching. And
well, actually, there's a thread that ties it all together.
Okay.
The original law enforcement was at Penn State University, and that was the College of Health and Human Development. And my area in that was mainly around probation work and corrections, which is really in the human development area rather than law enforcement as the enforcement side.
Okay.
So I started off there, went on. I was a probation officer in juvenile court, and everything sort of followed. It's in developing things that people generate more than anything. So when you're working with kids in juvenile court, you look for every resource you can to get them from point A to point B. So that thread carries all the way through to coaching, you're working with people or you're working with an organization that's trying to get from point A to point B.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out. You know, so many times we look at our job descriptions or titles, and it sounds like we've had this disconnected past life. Until you understand the thread behind them, the core competency of who you really are, what you're really interested in, that you've been able to apply in different ways.
Well, we're seeing this in a lot of areas. We're seeing it in larger businesses. There's been, the whole HR department was originally human resources, which means places that you can go when you're looking for talent to come in. And a lot of pretty much forward-looking organizations are starting to turn it into human relations. So it is not only finding the talent, but developing the talent. What companies are finding that it can cost a company three times a person's salary to replace them. So why start off, bring in great talent, and then end up having to turn them over?
Oh, and, we're not going to go into it today, but my pet peeve is the whole onboarding situation of we spend all this money and effort to find the perfect candidate, we hire them, and then we're too busy to pay attention to them the first couple of weeks they're in the office.
Exactly.
That's so sad. Well, look, tell us a little bit about your business in the sense of what did you do before what you're doing now?
Okay.
So kind of bring us up, and then you can tell us really more about your business today.
Okay. I mentioned about the probation work.
Yeah.
I was doing that in Pennsylvania. I moved to California. I was looking for something to do. And what my background included was photography. I liked it as a hobby. I liked it doing it. And I liked the the process. I turned that into an actual small business of doing photography for magazines. Yeah. I flipped that then in the magazine area to start working on business development for magazines. And so that started pulling me into the business area, you know, how do businesses operate. One of the things that happens with anybody, if you go into a company and you're working, probably the best position to be in is a sales position, because you have to learn the company, you have to learn the clients, and you also have a business experience itself, is try to build your business.
Right.
So I went from there into co-founded a publishing company with a business partner, and we were publishing the magazines that you mentioned earlier on for the military area. Loved working with a team. Loved building a team. Loved building a publication. And the gist of building a company is building a team. You know, how do you build a team that really works? And that. Sold that company off about 5 years ago. And in the process, I was doing coaching work. I was doing coaching for nonprofits. I've done that for about almost 13 years now.
Good for you.
And that got me interested in the whole coaching thing. How to do that? So again, I go back to, you know, that thread coming out of working with juvenile court and juvenile probation, at how to find resources was always my constant thing. How to feed the fire, how to get things to basically grow. So I started my own, literally a consulting company at the time, and started consulting with companies, which is real different from coaching, as you probably know.
Yes.
And so you work from one job to another, and you have tasks, and you have things that you're going to produce, whereas coaching is the process of getting, you know, them from point A to point B.
Which do you like better, coaching or consulting, and why?
Consulting is always intriguing. You know, it really is, because you can look at a project or you can look at a need and see a way that you can fulfill it. Coaching, you really look at an organization and see where you can help them to get, or where you can work with them. So I find that coaching is more rewarding for me personally, because I get to work with a business leader and somebody who either started a business or is in a company in a position, because we all know that. I've been there, too. You get into a position where you have fiscal control. You have people that are looking to you for answers at different points. And you go in that with an idea of, this is what I really think I can do here.
Okay.
And that's where I think coaching is a phenomenally great experience. I got into it literally for this reason. I could probably name 5 or 6 different periods in my own professional growth that I could have used a coach.
Only 5 or 6?
Well, they were always at sort of transitional times.
Yeah.
You know, at one point, whenever I was doing the one publication, I was the U.S. Sales and Advertising Manager. And the challenge we had was I literally got the position, and a month later, the owners had said that they were going to close down the U.S. operations.
Oh.
And I talked them into, this was 2 months in the job, talked them into keeping it open for 6 months and said, I think I could turn it around. And as I think anybody out there knows, that you definitely can't do that by yourself. So it was looking for the talent and building that up. And we not only kept it going, but we increased the business end of the company by more than $1 million. So it was, and at that time when that was getting close, you start thinking, what am I going to do next? You know, how do I follow this up? What do I do? And, you know, there are some people that thrive on things growing and making them grow. There are other people that thrive on getting things and maintaining them and keeping things growing and do that. I'm more of the kind of person that really likes to see something grow. So I'm looking for the next challenge, always looking for the next one that we can take and do something with.
Sounds to me like, I don't want to say you get bored easy, but you like a variety. You like change.
I guess on the surface it would sound that way. But some things, you know, change for the sake of change, you know, doesn't always work.
Right.
So it really is taking a look at what's working. Sometimes I get really excited about seeing something that, you know, I talk to businesses all the time. And so when I'm talking to a business owner or a manager of a department, the first thing I want to hear is what's really working. And rather than what can I change, it's what's really working. And then my questions all come back to, can you do more of that? Can you do more of what works? And typically, every organization has something that's working, and then they want to change. And maybe they want to do something that's not working more.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, why do you want to do that if it's not working? Because they think that, they get bored. Or they want to, I've been doing this way for years and years and years. Maybe you are doing it the best way. But if you're not, and it's not getting where you want to be, then it's time to
change. So you've kind of given us some background. So then tell us more about your business now. How do you get into coaching? What kind of training did you get? Tell me about your franchise business. I'm not familiar with it. Our audience would be curious.
I got into coaching. You mentioned the executive coaches of Orange County.
Yeah.
I'd like to say I was recruited, but sometimes when you're working with a nonprofit, recruiting is the person that doesn't step back whenever they say we got something that needs to get done. But I got involved with them and worked with them for about 10 years, and they had a coaching platform. And to me, that was interesting. How does a coaching platform work? So it was more of a learning experience and working with organizations. The most successful thing that I found was that the two clients that I worked with the most, they did some phenomenal things. We talk about the, in the introduction, you talked about the opening of the Family Resource Center. This
yes.
was a small group of people in the city of Stanton, and it included two or three people that were in the city offices, and the other people were community service people. They were from the hospitals that served the city. They were from the schools that served the city. They were from other organizations, including the fire department and others. And they just said, we have an idea. If we can, as a collaborative, discuss things that are going on in the city that we can improve, then we'd like to go somewhere with it. And so they were looking for a coach. And I volunteered, again, person who didn't step back far enough or whatever, but they intrigued me. Here they are, this, I don't want to use the ragtag, but they were this group of people, and I thought, well, can I get them to organize themselves enough to know where they're going to go? And it ended up that we were working for about 6 months, and they came to me and said, we heard about this grant that's available. And it was for $1.25 million, and it was to do a family resource center. And they said, do you think we should apply for it? And I said, certainly. I will help you do it. I don't understand grants and didn't at the time, but I will help you figure out what you all need to do. And maybe you have all the resources yourself. And they found that they did. Throughout all the organizations, they found that they had the resources to do it, and they were awarded the grant, and they
wow.
received subsequent grants. Truth is, I did very little on that. City gave me their man of the year type of thing and all that. But the thing is that only thing I did was what a good coach does. I just kept putting them together and saying, okay, here's what the practices are. Here's what the best practices are. Here's what I understand is going on out there. You work it out. And they literally did that, and I didn't. It was just keeping them focused on what they were trying to do.
Just as you said, exactly what a good coach should do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now tell us about your coaching practice then.
My coaching practice, you mentioned AdvoCoach. I'm currently an AdvoCoach. AdvoCoach is a coaching system that comes out of Connecticut. I'm literally a franchisee for California. They're predominantly on the East Coast, and it kind of falls off towards the West Coast. Company itself is about 40 years old. The AdvoCoach system is about 7 or 8 years old within it. And they are, I just came back from one of their conferences, and there were almost 600 coaches there
wow.
in different areas. But in AdvoCoach, we've got about 50 of us. And in California, there are probably 3 or 4. And I was looking for something, again, that resource thing, something would give me resources. And so I started looking, and as a coach and even as a consultant, you spend a lot of time trying to develop something. Particularly as a consultant, you try to develop something that's very particular to a client. As a coach, you start looking around for what's currently available for them. And I was always looking for what my best resources would be. And when I looked at them, they have systems that I like, but they also are structured so that I've got and my franchise has a lot of latitude. So people think of franchises. We think of things like Taco Bell, McDonald's, and stuff like that, where everything is exactly the same. This, we have access to all the same systems, and at the same time, I have access to all the other coaches. So if I'm stuck or if there's an issue that comes up, I go back to that probation time. You know, where's my resources? Where can I find something that will, again, with my focus on getting somebody from point A to point B, how can I get them there?
Okay. And the question that everybody always asks coaches, how do you find your clients? How do you get clients?
For me, it's probably the easiest thing is that I want to learn about everybody's business. Even when I was doing publishing, the thing that I really liked about publishing was talking to clients and learning their business. And anybody that's out there that's been in the publishing business, in ones that are like newspapers or advertising or magazines or even television and broadcast, will understand that the thing that propels that company is revenues coming from advertisers and clients. If you're in that business and you're trying to bring in clients or advertisers, what they're looking to do is literally build their business.
Right.
And not, you know, the person that goes out into that area and says, want to buy an ad, want to buy an ad, want to buy an ad, doesn't do very well. The person that goes out there and networks and helps somebody build their business is the person that succeeds, that I've seen succeeds phenomenally and more than I had ever had. So I've adopted that. So my thing is I want to learn about as many businesses as I can. So I call, I go to meetings, I go just to go out and see how people's businesses are doing.
You know, you keep coming back to really the key principles behind coaching, and it's no coincidence. I mean, it's your curiosity. I think that's one of the things that makes for a good coach is coaches are just curious about everybody and everything. Your willingness to help, wanting to help people, your orientation towards teams. We talked about that, I think, even before the show is very much like to be part of a team. You don't have to be the man. Mm-hmm. Those are all talents that I think, besides knowing how to coach, those are the basic core capabilities that good coaches have.
Yeah. When I first looked at it and thought about it, you know, the first thing I thought about was in coaching was, well, sports coaches. Well, I'm not a sports fanatic in any sense, and there are just a few sports that I will watch at different times. So that analogy to me was kind of strange, except that I found that there are coaches in every area. If you're Olympians have coaches, then the top people. And if you look at coaching from that standpoint, is the coaches really aren't high profile.
Right.
But they get an incredible reward from seeing somebody that they're working with or an organization they're working with get somewhere. And that's inherent in me.
What would you say, what's the highest point? What have you worked on that you got the most satisfaction out of?
The most satisfaction was a client that I worked with, and early on, she was developing an organization. And she came to me and said, here's my problem. And I said, what's that? She says that she loves her organization. I can't really identify enough in terms of trying to identify it without that causing a problem. But what she had said, here's the problem, is that she started working with somebody that was helping her grow her organization. And when she talked to me, she was in it for about a year, and she said that person turned around and wanted to hire her and take over the company or the organization.
Not unusual.
Yeah. And she was like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And from there, it got to where she's been in operation for about 10 years now. She's very well known in the area that she's working in. She controls the organization. She understands the organization. And she, I would say, is one of the fastest growing that I have seen. So that's incredible. That's okay. Kind of nice to feel that you're part of that.
All right. Well, look, we're going to take a quick commercial break here, and then we're going to come right back and get into our topic for today. Thanks. Hold on.
this holiday, there's the kind of gift card you give out, then there's the kind of gift card that gives back. With 1OC's charitable giving cards, your company can give the gift of giving to employees, clients, friends, anyone you like. They, in turn, can use the card to make a donation to any local or national 501c3 charity of choice, while your company enjoys a tax deduction. Doing good is in the cards. 1OC Charitable Giving Cards. Call 714-953-5757 or visit 1oc.org.
And now back to Doug and his guest.
And we're back, and we're talking today to Dan Shirobi, and we've just gotten his background, fascinating background, a lot of different but very related kinds of fields. And we're going to talk about our topic today. Our topic is supervising greatness, sharing the vision throughout the organization. Dan, what's behind this title?
The thing that's behind the title is I'll tell you a little story. As I mentioned, I like to call and talk to businesses. And I called a business that's in a medical practice, and the lady that answered the phone had said it is a – she said the name of the business and said, we do micro knee surgery. And without thinking, I said, what is that? And she said, well – and she proceeded for about 3 or 4 minutes to explain micro knee surgery. And I said, it sounds like you've been doing this. And she said, no. She says, it's very important for everybody in our company to understand what we do. That is what charged this, is that if your company, if you call, and literally this happens all the time. The person that you talk to, maybe somebody in your shipping department, what do you do? You know, what's your company do? I talked to a group of restaurateurs at one point, and I just started asking this question. I asked out and said, who here has a restaurant, you know, that they manage? And people put up their hands. I picked one guy, and I said, okay, what's the name of our restaurant? And he told me the name of the restaurant. I said, good. What do we serve in that restaurant? And he said, the type of food we serve. I said, how do we feel about our customers? And I'm looking at him, and each question, he was like, And I said, there's something bothering you. He said, sounds like you own my restaurant. And I laughed, and everybody laughed. And I said, you know what's funny about restaurants is that you think you own the restaurant, but my wife and I take people to restaurants and say, we're going to take you to our restaurant. You know, yes. Wouldn't that be magic for a restaurant? Wouldn't that be magic for any company that if you've got somebody that's working in the shipping department that says, my company makes the best X, Y, or Z, and I work there. And I saw that story very early on. When I was in early college, a friend of mine, his dad owned a construction company, and he hired me on for $2 an hour. Everybody's making union wage back in Pennsylvania, but I was a student, so I made my $2 an hour. But the funny thing about it was my friend John, he would take me around and say, see that building? We laid the floor of that building. And then it's like, see that driveway going up there? We did the floor. And I saw this pride in him on what they did, that it was contagious for me. And so I start telling people that. You know, I worked on that. You know, I'd made $2 an hour at doing really grunt labor work. But there was some pride in it. And people would say, well, who do you work for? You know, imagine the magic that happens for a company when all the employees are out there saying, here's what we do.
You know, you mentioned before the show to me that you live in Woodbridge in Irvine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell a story about Woodbridge. I was involved in the developing of Woodbridge, and we were trying to open it up. And this was a project that for the Irvine Company, we were going to have an opening on Father's Day back in the early 70s of 7 projects simultaneous on one day. Now, that had not been done before. And it was a week or two before, and really you would go out and look at the site and figure there's no way we're going to ever be able to get this accomplished. The trenches were dug. You couldn't drive down the streets. The sidewalks weren't poured. All kinds of problems. Well, we had a marketing guy that was a genius, Ken Agate. Ken showed up one day on site with little buttons that pinned to your shirt that said, I built it,
mm-hmm.
Woodbridge. And he went around, and every single person, hundreds of guys working on those projects, some for our company, some for others' companies, all got a button. You could almost see, visually see, the difference in pace in how they worked and the attention they were paying to get that project done.
I will tell you a counterbalance to that because, you know, that's wonderful. And what most department managers, business people, and even human resources people think about in terms of motivating their employees, they think about in terms of money and not these things that are much more lasting than money.
Yeah.
And my counter story about that is that one of the positions I had, I was managing a staff, and the owners of the company had said, "We've got a great benefit." And I said, "What's that?" And they said that every year for Christmas, the Christmas bonus is equivalent to 2 weeks' pay. I went, "Wow, that's wonderful. What a wonderful Christmas gift that everybody's getting." What happened was they were doing it over a series of years, and I started talking to people that were working there, and I'm going, "Well, this is great. The company does a Christmas bonus." They go, "Oh, yeah, that's my salary." And sometimes the little things will give more of an impression than dollars and cents. And not to say that bonus, I really attribute all that to, to really motivating. But the thing is that sometimes it's the smallest things that really generate the best.
Well, you kind of started with talking about the need or the benefits if everybody in your organization understands what you're doing, the receptionist answering the phone, able to explain what you're doing. Where I kind of thought you were going with this title was talking about, we hear a lot about the vision statement for the company, and does everybody understand the vision statement? Is there a difference between what you're talking about in that? I mean,
vision statements are kind of, I'm not sure where they started. They're intrinsic in the nonprofit area, where nonprofits talk about if we do everything, we will reach a vision. Your vision can be no hungry child. Your vision can be that a specific illness is cured or is abated. So you have a vision at that, and then you have a mission that will take you in that direction. And it's kind of funny is that I saw that myself more implicit in a nonprofit area, whereas in a corporate area, you hear less of it, but you're starting to see more now. So in terms of the vision is, look at Apple, Apple computers and stuff. Their vision isn't to make a computer. Their vision is the dream. And it's you've got an Apple.
I'm an Apple nut.
it's a culture. Yeah. And so companies that go to having a vision are companies that will create a stronger culture, because what happens with a vision is that, day-to-day work, you end up in conflicts with people. You end up trying to decide something that needs to be decided, whether or not it was good or wrong and all that. But when you can push it back to what the vision is, it simplifies things. It also simplifies management.
Okay. So is this what you're talking about then, sharing the vision throughout the organization? Is it the vision statement, or is it an understanding of what the company does?
I think having a clear vision statement is extremely important, if not a game changer for a company. And a vision statement is why the company exists. And I think that is implicit that it has to be in a company. Some companies may not have it, and I've seen departments create a vision. I've seen different organizations create a vision that is outside of it and eventually works its way up to the upper management of the company.
Okay. I think the reason that, my own opinion, nonprofits, like you said, have a clearer vision statement than corporate organizations. Because in the corporate environment, the focus seems to be on profit dollars, which doesn't make for a good vision statement. You know, if it's your company and I'm working for you and the vision is for you to get rich, that's not real motivating for me.
It might be more of a motivating if you looked at the difference between profit and value. A company can be extremely profitable but have its actual value of the company going down simply because of what may happen next in the market. You can be profitable one year, unprofitable the next. You can go through cycles during the year on profit. Value is something that you build into a company that is, well, you know, if you look at stocks and stuff, there are some stocks that are making no profit whatsoever, yet people see a lot of value in owning the stock. So value I tie more into a vision.
Okay. And the value is the value in whose mind? The company, the employee, the customer?
Everybody's.
Everybody. All the stakeholders.
I'll go back to that Apple thing. I personally have not owned an Apple product.
You don't know what you're missing.
I do know what I have. I've owned Apple stock.
Oh, okay.
So I look at the value.
You know, we talked earlier about the coaching. There was a statement, you coach rapid developing organizations with management that wants to succeed at impressive levels. That really got my attention, impressive levels. What do you mean when you're talking about taking a business to the next level? What's behind that?
Well, you also mentioned the change, and that ties into change. An impressive level, if you take what a standard growth rate might be, a revenue growth rate or a profit growth rate, if a company is growing by 25% a year, what is it, 3 years, they double what they're making in either revenues or profits and that. A substantial level is to take something where you have the makings of a team that can do something, and the result is not happening. So if you have a very energetic team and you have a goal of increasing by 25%, you may have members of the team, or you may have a team that could do 50%. So what do you do? Do you pound them down? Or do you give them some leeway? And how do you do that so that you're secure enough that you feel that you're not just gambling? So that's what I'm really talking about at impressive levels. And that's not for every organization. You can, you know, there's an old story that was about, I forget the name of the brand, which is good, which is about dog food. And they kept saying, you know what, we got the best marketing, we got the best salespeople out there and all that. And yet our dog food sales are still in the toilet. And somebody who was the janitor raised their hand and said, it's because the dogs won't eat it. So that's it. And it's, you know, in some aspects, people talk about a 360 review of a company or a 360 review of an organization in consulting. In coaching, you really look at, you know, what game are you playing in? You know, maybe you've got the right team and maybe you're on the wrong field. Maybe, you know, you just need to sort of take off the blinders and see where you really can go if you start unleashing things, but unleash them in a way that you're secure enough to know that it's going to happen.
Okay. But, you know, one of the conversations that frequently gets held is the rub between coaching and consulting. And, you know, those who are formally trained in coaching will get their backs up and go, I don't consult. We should never consult. That's crossing the line. It's wrong. And yet so many business coaches that, like you and I, that work with businesses and business people, there's always an element of consulting in that. How do you handle that?
Particularly since I've done both.
Yeah.
It's tempting. It's tempting to jump back and forth, but if you're a coach and I'm working with a client and your process is coaching, The temptation to consult is very high, but the problem there is you really start referring yourself. And that's how I deal with it. It's like, oh, sure.
I like that.
And yes, if you need this done, yes, I can do this. You know, so hire me to do it rather than a good coach who would say, you know what, you know, here's your. So I would take my consulting experience and try to talk the client through how to pick a consultant that may come in and do exactly that.
Okay, good answer. Okay, so along that same line, in consulting, frequently the client wants to know what's going to be my ROI. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pay you X number of dollars, and you know, what am I going to earn on this? If you're going to give me advice, am I going to make 10 times, 100 times what I'm paying you? How do you measure ROI in coaching?
For me, and one of the reasons I like my organization, we actually do start from financials. You know, where are you financially now? And my guarantee to my clients are that in a period of time, my costs will be absorbed by what changes in your company and what grows in your revenues. So in other words, if I was coaching you, I would be telling you that we would decide on where you want to be in 3 months, or where we can get in 3 months, where we can get in 6 months, and where we can get it in a year. And my objective would be to set it up so that financially, at the end of 3 months, let's say, my costs are absorbed because you grew your revenues, or you cut your costs, or you came up with a new way to do business, or a new client base, or something that is changing for you. So
is that measurement of ROI as a coach any different than the measurement that you would use as a consultant?
Well, the funny thing about consulting is I've not seen that a lot, which probably might be good. But what I'd seen in consulting is people that in organizations that say, I really need to get this done. And I'd always come under the aspect of that if I can't help you, I really don't want to do it just to take your money. But I'd run into a lot of times in consulting, and consultants out there will tell you that it's a competitive business, and people will come back and say, you know, I found a consultant that'll do that for half the amount, or I found a consultant that'll do this for this amount, or I know somebody that does it for this amount. And then if you follow up and talk to them a couple of months later and say, how did that go? It gets surprising that the answers that you get back. A lot of times it's, well, it didn't really work out the way I wanted to. And they go, well, and sorry, but I have no problem with saying, did you pay him? Well, yes, that was in my contract. You know, it's sort of like if you're, you know, this is why you would go to a coach. If you're going to a fitness coach, you would like to get more fit. And yes, you will pay money to get more fit. And if you're not doing anything that's going to try to get you more fit, you won't get more fit. Same thing with music. If you go to a music coach or a performance coach, if you do nothing will happen. You know, that's a guarantee. But if you're working at it and working at it with a coach, you really do expect to see results. And that's the way I approach coaching, is that I want my clients to demand results. And we can talk about what those results are, whether or not they're reasonable or not. I had one client that said, well, you know, I'm doing $1 million worth of business. At the end of 12 months, I want to be doing another $1 million worth of business. And then the answer to that is, let's take a look at that. You know, is that reasonable? Why aren't you doing, you know, mm-hmm. Why aren't you incrementally going rather than doubling your money? Is there something you're missing and all that? And that's part of the coaching process. But that's also part of ROI. You know, as a coach, more than as a consultant, because consultants can move from one job to another and move from one client to another. Something that hurts coaches more than it hurts consultants is a reputation. So if you're a coach and out there burning through clients and got people coming back and saying, you know what, nothing worked, or it didn't work with them, it's a very short-term strategy. You know, it's so long-term, yeah. You won't stay in business.
You know, I like your analogy of a fitness coach. I hadn't thought of it that way before, but if I go to a fitness coach, I've got some objectives. I maybe want to lose weight. Maybe I want to be able to build my strength in certain ways that can be measured. But I certainly don't expect the fitness coach to lift the weights or work out on the machines for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be a little silly. Mm-hmm. And yet, so many times when we are talking about coaching business people, they sort of expect the coach to do some of the work where they wouldn't expect that fitness coach to be lifting their weights in the gym.
Exactly. Yeah, but the thing is that if you do the work, you know, if you bring me in as a coach or you bring somebody in as a coach and your coach does all the work for you, you will either become codependent on them always doing the work, you will push them more into becoming a consultant for you, and you will have learned nothing about growing your business or growing your department.
Okay. And there is a good argument for the long-term value of coaching. Stand on your own. We leave them better off than they were when we got there.
As I said, there were quite a few times when I wanted a coach or needed a coach and couldn't figure out where to go.
You, I think it was in something we talked about before the show. It hasn't come up yet, but there was a term you used. You talked about psychometric styles of employees.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? What that just sort of grabbed me there.
Yeah, it's kind of funny is that this is, I guess it goes back to Myers-Briggs and some of the psychological profiles. I don't want to say they come and go, but by now most people in most organizations had either taken some sort of a personality test, you know, what kind of personality yep. are you, and they walk away with that and go, wow, I know what I am. But what you don't know is why, let's say, you and I may get along, but me and somebody else may not, and me and somebody else may not. Psychometrics are basically, and they're styles now. I think it used to be termed as a personality, but people change styles throughout life. The one that I favor the most is DISC, D-I-S-C, which defines a style as D for dominant, I for intuitive, S for steady, and C for compliance. And when you look at, if you're working in an organization or if you're an HR person and somebody comes to you and says, I really don't get along with so-and-so, it may be because somebody who has a dominant style. Dominant styles are people, I'm a D and an I is my style. And the reason I like it is it's easy for me to remember, by the way. And it seems pretty descriptive, whereas the ENTJ and EN, you know, those things are take a little more mind work on it. But whenever somebody is more compliant, is working with somebody who is dominant. A person who's dominant makes faster decisions, wants to get things done, doesn't play around a whole lot with deep details. A person who has a style that's more compliant is the person in the organization says, did we think about this? Or, you know, there's a regulation about this. Or there's this. And there's a natural tendency for them to create a big wall between them.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that if you look at an organization, you really need both. You know, so if I'm hiring somebody and I go, wow, you know, I like people who are eyes because they're all outgoing, and all that kind of stuff. And after a while, you have, you know, lots of cocktail parties, you have lots of going out and socializing, you got lots of things going on and all that. And you go, well, you know, our business is we have a checklist of things that need to get done for the business, and only half of them are getting done. You know, it's because there's not somebody who has a real strength and an interest in compliance, you know, keeping people on track.
Right.
You know, so that I think is critical for an organization to look at. And any manager or any owner that just hires people because somewhere in there they think they like them, maybe just simply hiring somebody because they're a similar style or only one or two styles that are compatible with them, and maybe wondering why something else isn't happening.
You know, I use the DISC extensively myself, and I love it as a tool.
Did I get it
exactly
right?
Exactly the same reasons, yes.
Okay.
I think it's a great tool. I think it is one of the easiest ways to get started in team building, mm-hmm. for a team to start to understand the differences in each person's communication style,
mm-hmm.
and then how to adapt to work together better.
Exactly. I had an experience with it. I taught a program for Cal State Fullerton's Business School, their nonprofit research area, did a program for nonprofits, and actually this title was the title of the area we did. And I broke up the class evenly to where there was a D, an I, an S, and a C in each of, I think we had about 8 or 10 groups in there, broke them up and had there were 4 people in each of the groups, and each person had to tell the rest of the group the vision of their organization. And then I had the room go around and every D to stand up and say what they understood was the best vision that they heard and why they liked it. And then every I and every S and every C. And the results were pretty astounding. But it really showed what people hear and what they talk about and what they gather from somebody else. And it actually showed how they all communicate. So somebody who is a D thought they were communicating with everybody and weren't literally communicating with anybody. Or somebody who was a C thought that nobody was getting it. And, you know, all of them stood up and said that was the best one. You know, so.
Great. Well, look, we're getting close to time to wrap up here. So I want to make sure before we do, 2 things. 1, how do people get a hold of you?
Actually, email or phone. My phone number is 949-929-6378, and that actually is a direct line, so I'm sending that out here. And the funny thing about me is that I've got an extensive list in my phone that pops up names, but I unfortunately can't resist answering a phone. So I guess that goes back some time to when I was young. The other one is that I have an email address, which is dcharobee@advocoach.com, and there's a website which is dcharobee, which is dcharobee.advocoach.com. And I'd love to hear from, because the truth is that I really want to learn about your business.
Okay, and Dan's also on LinkedIn, so you can find him on LinkedIn also.
Thank you.
Okay. The other thing I want to make sure is there anything else you want to communicate to the audience here that we didn't get to or you didn't get enough time to really talk about?
I don't think so. The best thing I want to communicate is that whether or not you work with a coach or not, I really wish everybody success. Whether or not you work with me or not, I really wish you success. I enjoy seeing businesses grow. I just came this morning from a State of the City presentation from the city of Stanton, actually, which was absolutely wonderful. And my position with working with cities and all that is that businesses are an incredible part of a city. They bring revenues in. They provide employment to them. And the cities are an incredible resource to businesses. They provide talent, and they provide great working areas. So that's
great words. Dan, thank you very much for being with us today. It's been fascinating and educational, both at the same time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for your opportunity, Doug.
Well, look, how would you just tune in? Come on, huh? You couldn't just tune in the last minute. But anyhow, I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999, and I've been coaching business owners and senior executives and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, go to the website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, look, if you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, and be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests also. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, HR professionals to interview. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show today and the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.